Chapter 40. Shavedbar Waldenbir Scomberville 9 November. Sarab Partida Col Suo Cocquier. La Principessa a 27 Annie. 27 years old, and Scomberv scampered on the 9th November. You see by the added detail that she departed with her coachman. I hope Sarab has not made a mistake, but I am afraid the chances are that as he has. Sono disbiacentissimo. There are several fires. Also a couple of accidents. This is one of them. Grave disgrazia sul pontvecchio, stamattina, Sursula 7, 30, Mentor Gaius Upsiati, D.I.N.I. 55, D.I. Casalina e Tori, Passava dal pontvecchio, stando seduto sopra un baroccia carico di verdura. Perse l'equilibrio e cadde al suolo, rimanendo con la gamba destra sotto una ruota del vicolo. Lo sai fu subito raccolto da alcuni cittadini, ci, per mezzo della pubblica vettura N365, lo trasporto a San Giovanni di Dio. Ivi il medico di guardia gli riscontro la frattura della gamba destra e alcun levi scoriazi in I guida condolo garibilin 50 guirni salvo complicazioni. What it seems to say is this. Irius disgrace on the old bridge. This morning about 7:30, Mr. Joseph Ciatti, aged 55, of Casalina and Tori, while standing up in a sitting posture on top of a carico barrow of vegetable foliage, vegetables, comma lost his equilibrium, and fell on himself, arriving with his left leg under one of the wheels of the vehicle. Said Ciatti was suddenly harvested, gathered in, by several citizens, who by means of public cab number 365 transported to St. John of God. Paragraph number 3 is a little obscure, but I think it says that the medico set the broken left leg right enough, since there was nothing the matter with the other one, and that several are encouraged to hope that 50 days will fetch him around in quite guidicondolo garibile way, if no complications intervene. I am sure I hope so myself. There is a great and peculiar charm about reading news scraps in a language which you are not acquainted with, the charm that always goes with the mysterious and the uncertain. You can never be absolutely sure of the meaning of anything you read in such circumstances. You are chasing an alert and gamey riddle all the time, and the baffling turns and dodges of the prey make the life of the hunt. A dictionary would spoil it. Sometimes a single word of doubtful purport will cast a veil of dreamy and golden uncertainty over a whole paragraph of cold and practical certainties, and leave steeped in a haunting and adorable mystery an incident which had been vulgar and commonplace but for that benefaction. Would you be wise to draw a dictionary on that gracious word? Would you be properly grateful? After a couple of days' rest I now come back to my subject, and seek a case in point. I find it without trouble, in the morning paper, a cablegram from Chicago and Indiana by way of Paris. All the words save one are guessable by a person ignorant of Italian. Revolvere in Titro, Parigi, 27. La Patria da Chicago. Il Guardiano del Titro dell'Opera di Wallace, Indiana, avendo voluto espellere uno spettatore che continuava a fumare malgrado il divieto, questo spalleggiato dai suoi amici turbacquotò diversi colpi di rivoltella. Il Guardiano ripus. Nacuna scarica generale. Grand panico tra gli spettatori. Nessun ferito. Translation. Evolveration in theater. Paris, 27th. La Patria from Chicago. The cop of the theater of the opera of Wallace, Indiana, had willed to expel a spectator which continued to smoke in spite of the prohibition, who, spalleggiato by his friends, tiro fr. Tira, Anglis pulled manifold revolver shots. Great panic among the spectators. Nobody hurt. It is bettable that that harmless cataclysm in the theater of the opera of Wallace, Indiana, excited not a person in Europe but me, and so came near to not being worth cabling to Florence by way of France. but it does excite me. It excites me, because I cannot make out, for sure, what it was that moved the spectator to resist the officer. I was gliding along smoothly, and without obstruction or accident, until I came to that word, plagiado, then the bottom fell out. You notice what a rich gloom, what a somber and pervading mystery, that word sheds all over the whole Wallachian tragedy. That is the charm of the thing, that is the delight of it. This is where you begin, this is where you revel. You can guess, and have all the fun you like. You need not be afraid there will be an end to it. None is possible, for no amount of guessing will ever furnish you a meaning for that word that you can be sure is the right one. All the other words give you hints, by their form, their sound, or their spelling. This one doesn't. This one throws out no hints. This one keeps its secret. If there is even the slight shadow of a hint anywhere, it lies in the very meagerly suggestive fact that plagiado carries our word GG in its stomach. Well, make the most out of it, and then where are you at? You conjecture that the spectator which was smoking in spite of the prohibition, and become re-prohibited by the guardians, was get on by his friends, and that was owing to that evil influence, that he initiated the revolveration in theater, that has galloped under the sea, and come crashing through the European press without exciting anybody but me. But are you sure, are you dead sure, that that was the way of it? No. Then the uncertainty remains, the mystery abides, and with it the charm. Guess again. If I had a phrase book of a really satisfactory sort, I would study it, and not give all my free time to undictionarial readings, but there is no such work on the market. The existing phrase books are inadequate. They are well enough as far as they go, but when you fall down and skin your leg, they don't tell you what to say. Italian with grammar. I found that a person of large intelligence could read this beautiful language with considerable facility without a dictionary, but I presently found that to such a person a grammar could be of use at times. It is because, if he does not know the was, and the wases, and the maybes and the has-beens apart, confusions and uncertainties can arise. He can get the idea that a thing is going to happen next week, when the truth is that it has already happened week before last. Even more previously, sometimes. Examination and inquiry showed me that the adjectives and such things were frank, and fair-minded and straightforward, and did not shuffle. It was the verb that mixed the hands, it was the verb that lacked stability, it was the verb that had no permanent opinion about anything, it was the verb that was always dodging the issue, and putting out the light and making all the trouble. Further examination, further inquiry, further reflection, confirmed this judgment, and established beyond peradventure the fact that the verb was the storm center. This discovery made plain the right and wise course to pursue in order to acquire certainty and exactness in understanding the statements which the newspaper was daily endeavoring to convey to me. I must catch a verb and tame it. I must find out its ways, I must spot its eccentricities, I must penetrate its disguises, I must intelligently foresee, and forecast at least the commoner of the dodges it was likely to try upon a stranger in given circumstances, I must get in on its main shifts and head them off, I must learn its game and play the limit. I had noticed, in other foreign languages, that verbs are bred in families, and that the members of each family have certain features or resemblances that are common to that family, and distinguish it from the other families, the other kin, the cousins and whatnot. I had noticed that this family mark is not usually the nose or the hair, so to speak, but the tail, the termination, and that these tails are quite definitely differentiated. Insomuch that an expert can tell a pluperfect from a subjunctive by its tail as easily and as certainly as a cowboy can tell a cow from a horse by the like process, the result of observation and culture. I should explain that I am speaking of legitimate verbs, those verbs which in the slang of the grammar are called regular. There are other I am not meaning to conceal this, others called irregulars, born out of wedlock, of unknown and uninteresting parentage, and naturally destitute of family resemblances, as regards to all features, tails included. But of these pathetic outcasts I have nothing to say. I do not approve of them, I do not encourage them, I am prudishly delicate and sensitive, and I do not allow them to be used in my presence. But, as I have said, I decided to catch one of the others, and break it into harness. One is enough. Once familiar with its assortment of tails, you are immune. After that, no regular verb can conceal its specialty from you, and make you think it is working the past, or the future, or the conditional, or the unconditional. When it is engaged in some other line of business, its tail will give it away. I found out all these things by myself, without a teacher. I selected the verb aimer, to love. Not for any personal reason, for I am indifferent about verbs. I care no more for one verb than for another, and have little, or no respect for any of them. But in foreign languages you always begin with that one. Why, I don't know. It is merely habit, I suppose. The first teacher chose it, Adam was satisfied, and there hasn't been a successor, since with originality enough, to start a fresh one. For they are a pretty limited lot, you will admit that? Originality is not in their line. They can't think up anything new, anything to freshen up the old moss-grown dullness of the language lesson and put life and oh into it, and charm and grace and picturesqueness. I knew I must look after those details myself, therefore I thought them out, and wrote them down, and sent for the facchino, and explained them to him, and said he must arrange a proper plant, and get together a good stock company among the contadini, and design the costumes, and distribute the parts, and drill the troop, and be ready in 3 days, to begin on this verb in a shipshape and workmanlike manner. I told him to put each grand division of it under a foreman, and each subdivision under a subordinate of the rank of sergeant or corporal or something like that, and to have a different uniform for each squad, so that I could tell a pluperfect from a compound future without looking at the book, the whole battery to be under his own special and particular command, with the rank of brigadier, and I to pay the freight. I then inquired into the character and possibilities of the selected verb, and was much disturbed to find that it was over my size, it being chambered for 57 rounds, 57 ways of saying I love without reloading, and yet none of them likely to convince a girl that was laying for a title, or a title that was laying for rocks. It seemed to me that with my inexperience it would be foolish to go into action with this Matrelus, so I ordered it to the rear, and told the facchino to provide something a little more primitive to start with, something less elaborate, some gentle old-fashioned flintlock, smooth-bore, double-barreled thing, calculated to cripple at 200 yards and kill at 40, an arrangement suitable for a beginner who could be satisfied with moderate results on the off-start, and did not wish to take the whole territory in the first campaign. But in vain. He was not able to mend the matter, all the verbs being of the same build, all Gatlings, all of the same caliber and delivery, 57 to the volley, and fatal at a mile and a half. But he said the auxiliary verb of ear, to have, was a tidy thing, and easy to handle in a seaway, and less likely to miss stays in going about than some of the others. So, upon his recommendation I chose that one, and told him to take it along, and scrape its bottom and break out its spinnaker, and get it ready for business. I will explain that a facchino is a general utility domestic. Mine was a horse doctor in his better days, and a very good one. At the end of 3 days the facchino doctor brigadier was ready. I was also ready, with a stenographer. We were in a room called the rope walk. This is a formidably long room, as is indicated by its facetious name, and is a good place for reviews. At 9:30 AF-DB took his place near me, and gave the word of command. The drums began to rumble and thunder. The head of the forces appeared at an upper door, and the arch passed was on. Down they filed, a blaze of variegated color, each squad gaudy in a uniform of its own, and bearing a banner inscribed with its verbal rank and quality. First the present tense in Mediterranean blue and old gold, then the past definite in scarlet and black, then the imperfect in green and yellow, then the indicative future in the stars and stripes, then the old red sandstone subjunctive in purple and silver, and so on, 57 privates and 20 commissioned and non-commissioned officers. Certainly one of the most fiery, and dazzling and eloquent sights I have ever beheld. I could not keep back the tears. Presently. Halt! Commanded the brigadier. Front face. Right dress. Stand at ease. 1, 2, 3. In unison, recite. It was fine. In one noble volume of sound of all the 57 aves in the Italian language burst forth in an exulting and splendid confusion. Then came commands. About face. Eyes front. Helm a lee hard a port. Forward march, and the drums let go again. When the last termination had disappeared, the commander said the instruction drill would now begin, and asked for suggestions. I said, they say I have, thou hast, he has, and so on, but they don't say what. It will be better, and more definite, if they have something to have. Just an object, you know, a something, anything will do, anything that will give the listener a sort of personal as well as grammatical interest in their joys and complaints, you see. He said, it is a good point. Would a dog do? I said I did not know, but we could try a dog and see. So he sent out an aide-de-camp to give the order to add the dog. The six privates of the present tense now filed in charge of Sergeant Avere de Have, and displaying their banner. They formed in line of battle, and recited, one at a time, thus. I-O-O-U-N Cane, I have a dog. 2-I-U-N Cane, thou hast a dog. Egli I-U-N Cane, he has a dog. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.